back at it.
Here we go.
Forgive any sound difference with me. I don't know what this is going to sound like. Tony, you can see me. We don't release the videos of these, as our P4 peers know. But you can see me as we record this, and you can see that you're in my closet.
Yeah, I'm seeing all kinds of... Actually, I'm seeing some lady clothes in there, too. I guess
Don't worry about that.
Is it your closet or is it a shared closet? I'm just curious. It's fine.
You're not allowed to question those type of things anymore.
I've never seen you in leopard print, so this could be a good show.
Actually, that is one of Colleen's dresses right there. Well, nice. She'll be really happy with this episode.
You sound great, I think.
Okay,
no
good.
Technician, but
the movie we are tackling today is Last Voyage of the Demeter, and if I keep showing off Colleen's clothes, it'll be the last podcast of Maddie.
Well, sure. You keep threatening to do this as a YouTube podcast, so we're not there yet. But
how are you, my friend?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
What's new in your life? Anything?
What's new? My brother's in town, which is fun. We got to hang out last night a little bit. He's going to be here for about 10 days.
Matthew?
Matthew, who we were discussing earlier today.
Can we talk about that for a second?
We can.
Okay, because this isn't paranormal, but it's very much film and television. It's very pop culture. I discovered a television network, and I hope some P4 peers out there listen to it or watch it, rather. But listen to it, too, and that's going to come into the story. It's called Great Entertainment Television, GET. And it was part of my Hulu package. I just stumbled upon it. And the lineup is incredible. It's literally catnip for 50 and up, especially males. The lineup goes something like Hunter, Rockford Files, the original Magnum, Quincy M.D., and then Kojak. So
Quincy, I love that Quincy's in there. That's kind of an outlier.
Yeah, he's not as tough as the other ones, but
well, he's a medical doctor. He's just a doctor. Right. Isn't he like a morgue technician?
Yes, yes. He solves crimes by, doing the research, but he gets himself out in the field. You know,
Klugman gets on his boots and he goes out.
Yeah, he's socked a couple of guys. Oh, he's in a nice sweater, by the way, nice cashmere sweater as he does it. You know what's really funny about the intro to Quincy is it's like, so many, everything on all of these shows could not be done today, pretty much. But the intro credits, he's like examining a body. If you remember this, he's like pinching the skin. And then at the end, it's revealed to be a girl in a bikini and he's on a boat with a glass of champagne.
Oh, my God. Well, you probably could get away with it as long as you wink and nod your way through that. But
right. So the show in particular, Kojak, because I remember watching Rockford Files with my dad. And I remember, of course, Magnum was high school for me and you were a little older than me. So that was kind of our show. These other shows were a little more before my time. I was a young kid. So I've been obsessed with watching these episodes of Kojak. And just the styles and 70s. And I think we even talked about it on this podcast a little bit, watching these old shows. Well, come to find out, I'm doing this deep dive on Kojak. And I find out that they made a TV movie, 2-hour like special called Flowers for Maddie. So, and then I go in this whole deep dive. He had a music career. And I'm sharing this with you. And you pipe up with what factoid, Tony?
Well, I think you're talking about the fact that my brother Matthew was on an episode of Kojak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worked with Telly Savalas and yeah.
We have to do an episode with your brother and just an episode dedicated to that episode of Kojak. I have to watch it and we have to talk about it and play clips from it.
Okay.
And, yeah.
I'm down for that. He should be a guest on the show.
Yeah.
Trying to think if I'm sure he's done something paranormal at some point he can also discuss. So okay. It fits, Kojak is certainly not, although his sex appeal is certainly supernatural.
I was just about to say, I watched his video version of If by Bread, which was a number one hit in England. And as you said, he out Shatner's the Shat. I think it might've been before Shat. I don't know, but it's him bare chest exposed, lights up, he just fires up a butt. And there's a huge superimposed woman staring at him over his shoulder. And he speak sings the song If by Brett. You know, if a picture paints a thousand words, then why, oh, why can't I paint you? And it's like, wow, I'm watching right now.
Like an angry recitation of a love song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was something.
Have some bread, baby. So I am just like ecstatic. This is all, it's all, I don't know what it means. I'll probably end up like working.
It's connected
with
somehow.
Sabasa's
yeah,
son
there's
or
some,
so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's some kind of supernatural connection that we'll get to the bottom of it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, Matthew should be on the show. I guess we can find a copy of that episode. You know,
bet,
it's got to be available
I bet,
somewhere.
I bet on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been having a great time. Oh, so here's the other weird tie-in. Friend of show, Mike New. Mike New is one of the preeminent voice talents, and he does all kinds of movie trailers. He's the voice of a bunch of products and networks, and he is the voice of great entertainment television. So when I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, look at this lineup. And all of a sudden I hear this voice, and it goes, you know, coming up next, Magnum. I'm like, oh my God, it's Mike New, one of my best friends in the entire world.
Mike New, who's done some amazing stuff with us as well.
You know what? I'm going to play Mike New right now.
You are listening to the only podcast of its kind, hosted by two industry professionals.
He's the best.
So that's the guy who introduces Kojak.
Mike
so
is
it's
the
all
best.
Coming together. Yeah. My whole world's coming together. It's so weird.
And the other person who's the best, of course, is friend of the show, Dan Schachner.
Yes.
Who supplied some wonderful entertainment for us as well.
Oh, he's going to be coming on the show very soon because it's almost Puppy Bowl time. We're getting to that time of the year.
Okay. Well, it's an imperative.
Tony, no top three list tonight for time. We're going to get back to that next week. We had to kind of throw this one together. As I said, I'm in my closet and everything's crazy going on. Right
I think
now
when you get out of the closet, things are going to be a lot easier for you.
I might be wearing that dress right there when I do.
You should look, I'm sure it'll look good on you.
And now Tony takes us to the movies. This week.
1933.
Let's go.
1933. Wow. Well, this was the segment where I was like, why didn't I think this through? Because this is a lot of work. This is starting to become a lot of work. I love it. It's great. But by 1933, we have entered like a race to get the most supernatural paranormal movies out there, apparently. Like,
really?
Earlier on in the first 3 years of this,
hard to find.
You know, it wasn't hard to find, but there were only a few, you know, a handful every year. Now there's literally too many for me to actually go over.
Oh my gosh.
So I can do the highlights and stuff.
Yeah.
It was an incredible year. Let's frame this by saying, like, who does this year belong to? Who does 1933 really belong to?
The Prussians.
I'm talking purely in a Hollywood sense. Probably you're right. I would guess that Prussians could have, you know, been the most popular thing of the day. But let's just keep it to Hollywood.
Okay. Because also, full disclosure, I'm not really sure what Prussians are.
Weren't they like the Ottomans?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I know as much about that subject as I do these dresses to my left.
I think you know a little bit more about the dresses. I really want to see you in that dress.
Hold on. How about this green number?
That would look great on you.
Well, no, I'll take a
the red hair and yeah. Come on.
Wait, do you want the green one or the like this leopard one? Oh my God, look at this one. Oh, this is a Halloween thing.
Oh, any of these are fine. Dealer's choice.
Hold on. No, it should be a dress. That could be a guy's. That could be like just a regular.
Okay, I think the green would look great on you.
Green? All right, hold on. Did you ever imagine this is to be where this podcast went?
I didn't think so, but it was a stroke of genius.
You're here for it?
Nice.
Hold on.
Nice. It's your color. It is definitely your color.
How do you do a screen grab? Okay, hold on.
I'll do a screen grab.
Really? Can you? Okay.
Yeah. Excellent. This couldn't be better. This couldn't be better. We're gonna get some traction on this show. Finally, we're current. Finally, we're dealing with stuff that's on, you know, that people are talking about. It's great. It's really exciting.
Why do I feel like that picture is going to be used as evidence in some future court thing?
All right, let's get back to the matter at hand.
Okay.
1933. Who's the year it belonged to? You can
one
say,
more thing. One more thing. I was sorry. Just half of me was hoping that Amelia would walk in right when I was holding the dress up to my chest. Like if she had just happened to walk in, like, hey, have you seen my? Oh my God.
Oh, I'm snorting. Oh God. Okay. All right.
I knew we shouldn't spend this much time unsupervised with Maddie.
This is what happens when we don't have the time to put together a top three. It disintegrates pretty quickly.
I left the original studio and all hell's broken loose.
You're in a better mood though.
I am in a good mood. Maybe
yeah, you're out of your Hollywood funk or your Christmas time funk.
Well, that's true. I was grumpy then, but also I don't know. There's something less. I feel less presentational in my closet. So like maybe I just belong in the closet.
All right. I think, I don't know. Maybe people would agree with you on that. I don't know.
1933.
I'm learning. I'm always trying to learn. So I'd like other people to chime in on that one. Mm-hmm. I could learn. 1933. Yeah. Who does the year belong to? This year's got to belong to Faye Ray. You might think it belongs to King Kong because that's the first movie on the list. 1933 comes in strong with King Kong, the original King Kong. You know, I mean, doesn't get a lot more exciting than that for Hollywood fantasy filmmaking. Absolutely peak.
When I first met you, I asked you where it began with you with films. Was it being on set with your dad? Was it something like that? And you said your dad taking you to see King Kong. King Kong was your
totally
breakthrough moment with falling in love with film. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. It was my gateway movie. I was 3 years old and they took me to a revival movie theater to see it, you know, on the big screen. It was the first movie I saw. And it changed everything for me completely. And I've never been the same since that movie. And I just still love it. But, you know, dig a little deeper. The star of that movie, Faye Ray, everybody maybe knows from that film. Fantastic actor, great actress, beautiful and charming and funny. She's kind of like a horror movie Carol Lombard in a way. And she had made, by 1933, she had made 40 films already by the time she made King Kong.
God, really?
In 10 years.
Wow.
And in 1933... she had a triple header of King Kong, Mystery of the Wax Museum, and The Vampire Bat. Hmm. All of them complete stone cold classics in 1933 alone. But if you include 1932, she had five in a row that are absolute classic horror fantasy films. And she's incredible. She's like the original Scream Queen. And if you don't know her, she's not just King Kong's girlfriend. She's fantastic. She's great in all these movies. So she's got other stuff in here. King Kong, of course, you also had Son of Kong, which even as a kid, I thought was like a monkey grab. I knew they were not serious about that one.
A money grab.
Monkey grab, as the case may be.
In either way. Remember I said everything is going to all come together paranormally? I'm looking at a picture here of her. She's wearing the exact same dress I was just holding up. I mean, it's really similar. It's green.
Things are happening on this show. I can feel the energy. It's weird.
That's eerie.
That's really, really creepy.
That's Faye giving us a little wink from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
For paying tribute to her. Thank you, Faye.
So if I was going to say, you got your King Kong, you got your Invisible Man, too, also came out, which is great. Claude Rains.
Big one.
Directed by James Whale, who did Frankenstein and The Bride of Frankenstein. It's a great movie. Absolutely gorgeous. So you got these big ones, but then there are some ones that are a little bit deeper, not, you know, find him right away. And I gotta say, if there's one on this list that you just have to go out and see, it's the movie called Testament of Dr. Mabuse. And Testament of Dr. Mabuse is this insane Fritz Lang thriller with supernatural overtones.
Okay.
About a criminal mastermind who's imprisoned, but he uses mental telepathy and hypnosis to rule the criminal underworld of Germany. And this has been called a parallel to the rise of Hitler. And it is absolutely incredible. So if you want to see where movies like Die Hard and, even the Dark Knight got a lot of their ideas and energy. It's started here. It's absolutely amazingly modern and scary and great.
The Dark Knight's going to come up in the movie we're about to review, actually. It's in my notes, and I'll explain why. But I think you've mentioned this movie. I know you have.
I have talked to you. Maybe I've mentioned it on the podcast. But
yes, you have. I remember that title, and shame on me. I never went and saw it. But
I mean, it's like one of Fritz Lang's best things. It's just incredible. So you have that. And then you have, The Vampire Bat, which is another Faye Ray movie, where she's paired again with Lionel Atwill, who is in The Mystery of the Wax Museum, which is another great movie that came out that year. And Mystery of the Wax Museum is kind of partnered with a movie called Dr. X a lot. And they're both with Faye Ray, both with Lionel Atwill. Wow. They're incredible. They're both directed by Michael Curtiz, who directed Casablanca. And they are shot. There's kind of the last movies shot in this technicolor process called two-strip technicolor, which was actually like these beautiful color movies that they were making back in the day. And the color is unlike anything you've ever seen. It's just beautiful and weird and dreamlike. I really love these two movies. So check those out. Then there's got Deluge, which is an amazing post-apocalyptic melodrama about the destruction of the world. And then the people that are left, kind of the leftovers. And of course the first part's great. One of the best destructions of Manhattan in it you've ever seen.
Wow.
Like it goes on for 5 minutes of just chaos and buildings crumbling, and it's beautiful. And then the rest of the movie is just about these hillbillies who are trying to steal women from a local group of nice people. It's really weird.
All right.
Gabriel Over the White House. Amazing film. That's kind of lost. It's hard to find. I've never seen it, but it's very prescient. It's about a president who has a near-death experience, and then he dies and comes back to life, and then becomes a dictator, a democratic dictator in America.
Wow. Huh.
And apparently Roosevelt took a couple of pointers from that movie.
Hmm.
And you got Supernatural with Carol Lombard in her only supernatural thriller, kind of where she plays a Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Hyde kind of character, and then you've got Turn Back the Clock about time travel, a movie called It's Great to Be Alive about a pilot who gets lost on a remote island for a few years. And when he comes back, all the men in the world have become impotent. And he's the only person who can father the rest of civilization. And you got The Monkey's Paw.
That sounds very Twilight Zone-ish.
It's very Twilight Zone. Monkey's Paw, The Ghoul with Karloff. And another version of Alice in Wonderland starring Gary Cooper and W.C. Fields, which is weird, but true.
I'd like to see that.
That's 1933. It's coming hot and heavy now.
I feel like 1933 has been the most prolific of the years you've done so far in terms of choices.
Definitely the most impressive year, yeah.
Are people making more films, do you think, by 1933 compared to like 1930 when you started this?
They're still making a ton of movies in 30. I think it's probably about the same amount of movies being made. I just think that they're so successful with Frankenstein and Dracula that they just, you can see it. Like it's the same way the Hollywood works now.
Yeah.
It's just really interesting to see it back then when, they had never really even tried these genres before and were really, getting all the mileage out of them.
In 80 years or whatever. Yeah. People are going to be going through our movies and going like, oh, and then they decided to do a backstory prequel about this character. And then they did a prequel about Willy Wonka. And then they did a prequel about Willy Wonka's Oompa Loompas. Mm-hmm. It's like everything now I see comes out as a prequel. And to quote you, one of the great movie review quotes of all time, why does everybody keep trying to explain Mike Myers to me? That's become like my mantra about all these prequels.
You mean Michael Myers?
Well, yes. I'd watch a documentary about Mike Myers.
I like to think I understand Mike Myers without help.
Actually, he's really a bizarre guy. I know some people. Well, I don't want to speak out of school, but he's a very talented. But
I hear he's eccentric.
I've heard tell eccentric's a great word.
But good for him. We need more eccentric people.
Well, good for you, Tony. Thank you for educating us. There's definitely some stuff I want to Mabuse, I need to look, because that's the second mention you've given me.
Can't recommend that one highly enough.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, great. The big trill. I mean, King Kong, Mabuse, Invisible Man, can't go wrong.
Okay. I did see when I was a kid, not Mystery at the Wax Museum, but I did see The House of Wax with Vincent Price.
Yeah.
In the theater. It must have, because that was when the movie was made in the 50s, and I was there in like the early 80s. So it must have been like, did they do it in 3D? My memory is.
Yeah, I think House of Wax is 3D.
My memory is, it was putting on the 3D glasses with my dad and just being, let's see, 3D version, House of Wax. Let's see if that was done. Film premiered in 53, making it the first 3D film. Yeah, so they I saw it in like probably 83.
It was William Castle, right?
Yes, I believe so. I'm looking up that up now. Yeah, so they must have re-released it as a fun 3D thing.
Mm-hmm.
God,
because he was always doing those gimmicks, you know, like smell-o-rama and you know, seats with buzzers in them, right, ghosts that would fly out of the screen and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm so glad I remember that. I do remember putting on the 3D glasses of my dad and like things come at you, and like I'd never experienced that before. With this old movie, which frighteningly would have only been like 30 years old at the time I saw it.
Right.
It was only like 30 years old. Which,
yeah, time is weird.
Of,
yeah.
It is. You think of a 30-year-old movie now, it's like, what, Raiders? You know what I mean? It's like,
well, I mean,
not
you
that
know,
long
you,
ago.
Look, I just saw Saltburn, okay? And
yeah.
Saltburn is huge with young audiences right now. Like, it's a really, really hot movie for them. I don't know if it's the biggest moneymaker or not, but I just know it's like the conversation right now with younger film goers.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my niece Abby about this, cause she loves the movie. I was like, well, so what is it about it that's really speaking to you so much, you know? Cause I liked the movie, but it wasn't like mine in a way that I felt like this generation's kind of owning it.
Yeah.
And she's saying it's the nostalgia for 2006. Which blew my mind, but she says it's like watching the partying of that time is mind-blowing to us, and we're fascinated by it, and I don't even see that as a time jump, so that's really weird to wake up to that idea, you know. It's
you
really
and I were
weird.
Like having lunch planning a podcast like this in 2006. It's like nothing's changed for us. Yeah, but honestly, part of that, and I'm sure people have analyzed this to death and talked about this, not like a new thought, but I know this sounds so stupid, but for some reason, the 20th century, when you talk about like 1953 versus 1983 versus 1993, it's so clear. When it gets into the 2000s, it's hard to differentiate those numbers. Like 2002 to 2012 doesn't work as well mathematically in my mind to be that much of a different era. Does that make sense? The 2000s kind of hides those numbers. Does that, do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think that's, wouldn't that be, I mean, I guess that's maybe a product of getting older, is that things don't, you know, you're not aware of cultural changes in design and, you know, social culture as much maybe as you were in your 20s and 30s. I know I'm not. And the other thing is like after the phone and the personal computer, things have seemed to get more homogenous every year. Like since Apple took over the design world of tech and cars got all looking like an Advil pill.
Yes, cars look the same.
It's harder to tell these years apart.
This came up with the Kojak. You and I were talking Kojak. I go offline. I sent you a clip of Kojak, a very funny one, and I'm laughing at it. And I said to you, like, God, like, where are all these characters? No one talks like this anymore. Everybody talks the same now. Every detective talks the same. They have the same quiet mumble cadence, you know, rough voice. And then you're like, but it's like that noir quality where everyone was just a different character and just wild. And everything is very similar. But I mean, like literally viscerally numbers, like the actual numbers themselves don't differentiate for me as much in the 2000s as they do when I talk 60s, 70s, 80s. It's clearer in my mind the differences just numbers wise than saying like the aughts, like 2010. I'm like, okay, so 2010 to 2020 was a decade. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And maybe
I know that
me.
We're old, and this is probably a thing we should cut out of the show, because I think anybody younger than us is going to hear this and just go, what are they
what is he talking
about? What are they talking about?
You're right. No, you're
100% right. That's maybe the oldest thing I've ever said.
These numbers don't sound new. I can't tell them apart.
These numbers today,
they're not like they used to be. I can tell them apart.
These numbers don't make sense.
I could tell numbers apart before. Now I can't. The world has changed.
Colleen, where's my teeth?
Oh, my God. These numbers don't seem. I just literally said the numbers are different.
Oh, OK.
Honest to God. We should end this podcast on this episode. Okay.
We should just do this show on cruises. Like, dude, like cruise ship shows of this at this point.
You might think Tony and I sound a little different. That's because we're on a Viking cruise. By the way, have you thought of investing in gold?
Sell people reverse mortgages. That's the only knock on the Great Entertainment network is that there's a lot of the commercial loads are intense, so you have to DVR the shows and then be able to fast forward through the commercials, and it's all aimed at 55 and over, so it's like reverse mortgage commercials, you know, Viking cruises,
yeah,
sweaters,
a lot of medications,
numbers that seem younger.
Young numbers. Oh, I hate them.
Are you having are you having trouble understanding years?
What's with these young numbers? They think they're just as good as the old numbers, so they got something coming.
I'll show these numbers.
Oh, my God. All right. Let's get to Last Voyage of the Demeter, or as I like to call it, Dracula Boat.
If a picture paints 1,000 words, then why can't I paint you? And when my love for life is running dry, you come and pour yourself on me. If a man could be two places at one time, hey, baby, with you.
This is the story taken from the novel Dracula, in which there is a captain's log of the voyage of the Demeter, the boat that brought Dracula to England. It's starring Corey Hawkins as Clemens. David, I don't know how to say his name, Dashmack. You know, the names back in our day were much
they didn't have names like this then.
David Dasmalchian, I believe. He plays Wojciech. You saw him in The Dark Knight. You mentioned The Dark Knight.
Yeah, he works all the time, actually.
Yeah, he was really good in The Dark Knight. He's got one of those faces, and he's very good in this. Liam Cunningham is Captain Elliot. You might know him from Game of Thrones. He played probably my favorite character on Game of Thrones. And the movie takes place on a ship, and that ship is transporting some mysterious cargo. And in that cargo, you may have guessed, Dracula. So, Tony, this is a movie I'd never heard of. And when I saw the clear budget behind it in those early shots, that it almost kind of looked like a Disney joint. I think it was Walden Media, maybe, if I remember correctly.
And Amblin, I think, too.
Amblin, right? Entertainment. So a huge production budget behind this movie. I was immediately kind of like, uh-oh. Sometimes when I see an obvious huge price tag, big team behind it, all the glamour beauty shots, large casts of extras, things like that, these big exterior scenes, some of which seem to be stage work, some of which seem to be real, all beautiful though. In the first like 3 minutes, I think to myself, never even heard of it. This could be in the danger zone. So those are my initial thoughts. What did you know about this movie? How did it come into your mind to even tackle this movie?
I guess I saw the trailer and maybe I didn't pay enough attention to the trailer and I was like, oh, this looks, you know, fun. And it was in theaters recently as a new movie. And honestly, I think I picked it because the story is a brilliant, it's a really smart idea for a movie. I mean, I think say what you will about the film, the problem isn't the concept. It's a great idea. I mean, I wish I'd thought of it kind of great. I'd be like, oh, that's smart. Because it's also a really cool, not only part of the book, but a really cool part of most of the Dracula movies have a thing about him on the voyage, you know. He comes on the boat in Nosferatu. He does it in the Dracula from 78, which has got a lot of beautiful stuff in it. And it's just such a little movie within a movie always. And so to do the full thing, I thought was a great idea.
It's restrictive in terms of like, well, the mythos of Dracula we know, and then it's setting up the fact that, you know, this thing must get off the boat somehow because Dracula does get to England. So it sets itself up with a difficult task to pull off. Can you create an interesting narrative kind of knowing the ending in a sense? And it's from a pre-existing huge entity, and you're just taking one piece of minutia from it.
I think it's kind of like that movie Rogue One.
Oh,
and I think it's a similar way of breaking the stories down.
Rogue One's one of the few Star Wars things that I like loved. I think that was a straight up war movie.
Yeah. You like
war. Where they like, spoiler alert, like give themselves up and save the planets being like bombed.
Yeah. Like, well, it's about the team that goes to get the plans for the Death Star that we hear about in the first Star Wars movie,
right,
in episode
right.
four. We hear about these people that you know, risked their lives and lost their lives to get these files.
Yes, yes, yes,
right?
Yes.
It's and it's like one sentence. And so they went back and made the whole film about their attempt to get the plans for the Death Star. And and I agree. I think it's actually a really successful, you know, one of the successful Star Wars reboot movies, and I liked it. But it's the same kind of thing where, like,
yes, taking one
smart
little
idea, and it's property that everybody knows, so you don't have that much heavy lifting. But it's also a you know, you're really creating a lot of new stuff because that whole story hadn't been formulated. So yeah, that's why I picked it. I'm a big, you know, Dracula's great. I Dracula movies are some of my favorites in the vampire genre. And so I thought, why not? And then I immediately said, I've made a horrible mistake.
Did you really?
Pretty quickly.
Give it to me. Why? Because I was just thinking the other day, and this is not on purpose. I was like, we haven't had a good disagreement in a while over a movie. We've either alternately hated it together.
Yeah, we've been in pretty much lockstep.
Loved it together. But when I look back on our list of movies, it's really hard. They're either really obviously good or really obviously troubled.
Okay.
You know? And that's not on purpose. It's just sometimes these things go in streaks. But this is going to be interesting because I think I have a different opinion of this film.
I'm in a weird boat, you know, because I don't like weird Dracula boat, because I don't I try to keep like my really critical comments to movies that are like 25 years old or, you know, that maybe aren't being made by people currently working who might employ me, or I don't, you know, that's they're not. But I mean, just, you know, I make movies. I don't want to be negative.
Yeah.
I freaking hated this movie.
Wow.
I hate this movie.
Wow.
I hate it. I hated everything about it.
What?
I could barely sit through it. I could barely get through the film. So there, I've said it. And we can stop the show if you need to, because that's not going to get any better than that.
I might have to put one of these dresses back on
to lighten the mood a little bit.
Yeah, because
I
loved it, and I was gonna say it should get on a shelf. I wanted to give it a rated PG.
Whoa, here we go. This is a fight.
Okay, all right. So right off the bat, it looked beautiful to me. It's got some great beauty shots.
If you like a video game based on a Korean soap opera, it looks fantastic.
God. Oh my god. You didn't like the tracking shot over the table when they're like gambling, and then the exteriors of them packing
which
up the boat.
Which they took from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I know, it was a tribute.
Whatever. You can't. No, I didn't like any. I didn't like this movie. So I got you. Why did you like it?
Well, all right, let's go through it. I'll go beat through beat. Act one. I thought it was beautiful looking. The exteriors, just the look of it. There's a scene where they pick sailors to go on this boat, and they're all lined up on the stairs. And I think we got some nice little storytelling touches where Clemens, played by, as I said, Corey Hawkins, the captain immediately sees him and says, you're dressed like an educated man. What's your deal? And he kind of gives a little bit of his background. And, you know,
he tells them, like, look, I, you know, he's like, well, you're a college boy. You can't come on and be a sailor. What do you know about, what can you do on a boat that could help us? What do you learn at school? You don't learn to be a sailor at school. And he said, well, astrology for one, excuse me, I always do that. Astronomy for one, you know, I can keep track of the stars. And I just thought it was kind of a neat little piece of storytelling. Quick aside, in terms of like, because clearly right off the bat, like race is clearly, without them saying it that early, and there are some really on the nose things that happen throughout this movie. I'll grant you that point. They make some themes and they hammer them home to you. But race in terms of, you know, 19th century and 18th century and 17th century privateering and boating and pirating. I actually learned this in my Beyond Oak Island work, that we have a huge misunderstanding of what pirates were and privateers, and that actually they were the first. It's pretty admirable. A lot of what they did was horrible, no doubt, but they were kind of like the first group to have truly democratic societies on these ships. They didn't care what color you were. They didn't care what language you spoke or where you're from. If you could sail and you could get the job done and you'd fight for that captain, you were in and you were equal. Each man got equal share by half, as one of the famous pirate ships, the Whydah. They found the manifests of these ships, and each man got an equal share. They had a code of conduct on these ships. Like, I'm talking, you know, 18th century stuff. And one of them was like, if you harm a woman sexually, you're getting thrown overboard at sea. You're getting tortured and thrown overboard. So they had this code of kind of like seafaring ethics that was different than what was going on land. And in fact, former slaves, free slaves, made up a huge percentage of what we call pirates in quotes, because these captains said, hey, listen, you can live on land and live in slavery, or come out here and be free. You're gonna work for the ship, your ships, and you're gonna be equal to whoever else is on the ship or above, no matter what your skin color is. So anyway, that kept flooding to me.
I wish they made the movie about that. That would have been a great movie.
Well, they had a Dracula on board. I mean, Dracula was on board.
Did
what
they
did you want them to do?
Did they really?
Oh, ho, 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 ho.
Is right. really that what is that what they had on board?
Yes.
I thought it was like a reject from Ang Lee's Hulk combined with Gollum. It was the most rubber Johnny CGI crap bat I've ever seen.
Oh my God.
Stop it, Maddie.
I literally
Stop
said,
it.
I like that the Dracula is more alien than Lugosi. That was something I wrote down. I liked that it was kind of like,
well, it was
batty
a different...
and had veins and big ugly hands with claws.
Yeah, but that's all Nosferatu, and that's old stuff. That's not, they didn't invent that.
I know, but I liked it. I was worried it was going to be like some creepy guy.
Oh, a guy that tucks.
You know, creeping around the boat with weird eyes and like, oh, he's going to pretend to befriend them and kill them off one by one. But it's like, no, this is straight up horror in your face. People are going to get killed. And once people start getting killed, they get killed.
Yeah. Okay. I guess. Boy, did we see two different movies. Starting
did,
with,
I love it.
Yeah. Starting with you thinking it's beautiful, because I wanted to rip my eyes out of my face and squish them under a boot. I couldn't stand it anymore.
Dracula would have helped you with
if
that.
If I see another movie that I can't see.
Okay.
I'm
all right.
Done.
I'm going to acquiesce a great point here. The dark is dark, but I wrote this too. What movie that I've seen that happens at night hasn't been like this besides Nope? Nope's the only movie in the last decade that has shot stuff at night that I could see. And it's because they shot it in the day, or didn't they? And then they added effects. So, I mean, like, I agree with you. That is frustrating. You can't see these movies. And so huge.
Well, for a visual art form, I think it's a bit of a problem.
I agree. I
agree. And I'm starting to read a lot of articles about this too. The reasons are various, and it's really frustrating because it's a problem. And it to me, it's just bad work. Like, I don't understand the principle of it. I understand principally why you'd want things to be dark if it's nighttime, but that's like, they've made movies at night, in the night, in the dark, even in the 30s, they were doing
that you could see.
You don't always do day for night. The difference between having something to see in the frame and not is a big deal for me. It's like watching a radio show. I can't see anything. And it's not me being old. This is like, it's just weird. I can't imagine spending that much money on stuff and then having three quarters of the movie take place at night. And then this is all just bad color correction, Maddie. I mean, this guy shot all of Clint Eastwood's movies for the last 25 years. He knows how to shoot a movie.
I mean, he shot me.
Then he did. Mm-hmm. He did Mystic River.
Al Pazzo, baby.
Yeah. So Tom Stern, great DP. Like, he's done all of it. Letters from Iwo Jima, Flags of Our Fathers. Like,
kind of looks like Clint Eastwood. I'm going to look if I remember him correctly. Yeah, he's a badass. Those guys are badass.
No one, tell me he doesn't know how to light a movie so at night I can at least see what's happening in the frame. This is bad color correction. It is something that happens in post-production more often than not, because they control an enormous amount of what's exposable and what's not. And I don't know what it is. Most DPs and studios like to blame the audience and say, well, it's your crap TV, or it's, you know, you're just not used to seeing stuff. And I'm getting kind of tired of that. Here's an example. A record used to be produced so that it would sound great on a car stereo, on your crappy like Toyota car stereo, or at your home sound system. It would sound equally good.
Right.
So come on.
Right. No, that's a huge point. I'll acquiesce. I was frustrated by that too, but I kind of said, well, what movie hasn't done that to me in streaming? Like, I even, you know, even like war movies now, I get these cool action movies and they go into the desert at night and I don't know who's who. I don't know who's shooting who.
It's admittedly a big problem across the board with a lot of films and a lot of streamers and a lot of streaming films. And so, yeah, it's not just this movie, but a movie that takes place so much at night that is a horror movie about Dracula, where the design doesn't include me being able to see it at night, not even to see what's happening, makes me crazy angry.
So I still think it was beautiful. That said, like some of the landscape shots and the quality of the filming and the shots and some of the ocean work and things like that were beautiful. Agree. At night, difficult to see.
It didn't look like they shot it on the set for the Phantom of the Opera on Broadway.
A little bit, yeah. But I kind of so here's what I liked about it too, because early on I was writing things down like, we should call this the Voyage of Dumbinder. It should be called Maddie's Last and Only Voyage on the Dumb Eater. I had all these things, so I was like, oh, this is gonna be Disney. You know, because it looks so, but then I thought, well, maybe there's an element here where they're kind of romanticizing the mythos of Dracula, but then they're going to kind of like sock you in the gut a little bit, because I started to get indications of that, like after the first kill. And I think, I don't know if it was intentional, but that's what I got out of it. That like, this looks Disney and this looks big and like, it's going to go a certain way. And that kid, spoiler alert coming, that little kid's going to end up on that rescue boat with the black guy and the lady, and they're going to have a future together. And it's like, oh no, that ain't happening. I was like, ooh, all right. In. So it kind of, it's aesthetic of looking like it might've been on sets and like it was huge and grandiose and Disney-esque actually in the end worked for me, because it threw me off the scent of, it's kind of a badass devil movie in a way. With some serious kills and some...
It's not a devil movie. It's not even a vampire movie. It's a movie that posits there is nothing to fear because all is science. And it posits that if you just stand up to evil, you can be self-empowered. It's a self-empowerment movie. This isn't even a horror movie, Maddie. This is a movie about personal identity and about like therapy for people. And that's fine. Movies that are about... You know, feel good empowerment movies are great. Don't make your Dracula movie into that, because it does horrible disservice to the character of Dracula, who is not in this movie. And it makes the fear that the whole point of the exercise of making a horror movie at all is to confront what is darkest about mankind, and to have our lead package this as, I mean, it's just science and you don't frighten me and I'm empowered by going to become the new Van Helsing, I think is the most boneheaded move I've ever seen in a horror movie. And it's not a horror movie for that reason. It's an action movie, a kind of an action thriller about a bat on a boat. And it's about a bunch of crew members who go one after another, who go out on the deck and go, Hans, Hans. And then they get eaten. And somebody else goes out and goes, Gregor, Gregor, where are you? And then he gets eaten. And Wojciech, where are you, Wojciech? And then he gets eaten. you can't make Alien again. They already made it. And I can't believe that you fell for, I can't handle it. Okay. I'm done. Rant's over. Do you like, I mean, was it the fact that he gave blood transfusions, which hadn't been invented yet, without any blood available on board, that really made you like the movie? Or was it the fact that once he gave blood transfusions to the woman and then saw the same thing happening to the kid, didn't try to save the kid, but save the girl? Which part of that was your favorite?
First of all, your eyes are really scary right now.
I told you, horror movies are supposed to be scary.
Second of all, it's in my list of demerits against the movie. I'd never said it was perfect. I said, how did he know she had a blood infection in the first place? She comes, they find a girl stowed away, and he's got medical training, and he sees her and he rushes her into the room and he's like, we got to stow away here. And she needs a blood transfusion. She's got an infection. And yeah. I was like, well, how does he know she has an infection? How does she know what the hell she has?
How does he know what blood is when they used to, in 1897, used to do blood transfusions with milk and saline?
Okay. So that was a problem. I kind of liked the setup, but then they blew it. There's another demerit. I actually liked the setup because it was all very subtle in the first act, and then they didn't trust it. The director didn't trust it because he says something like the Clemens character. He says, I just want to figure this world out. The captain says to him, which is a great quote, I think, from this movie. He says, well, maybe the world is supposed to be experienced and accepted and not understood. And then he answers and says, well, perhaps, but I'm going to get to the bottom of it. And I thought that was a cool, because you know it's coming. I mean, you know freaking Dracula's going to be running around the boat. And I thought that was an interesting setup. Like, okay, I get it. I get what's at stake here. He's going to face these supernatural things and have to come to terms with it. But then there's a later conversation during a storm, and him and a sailor are, you know, he's like, oh, your science, take your science. And I'm like, all right, we had it. You didn't need to re-explain it to us. So
but
agreed.
They did, and they kept it in the movie.
They did.
You know, I mean, which is how you gauge that it's not a good movie, because they keep the bad things in it.
I also think Clemens is a little too one note. He goes from being sheepishly excited to being on the boat and honored and pleased and psyched that he can participate and be part of it, to literally when he finds that girl, he starts ordering people around. He's like, I didn't save her just to have you kill her. And I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I'm like, whoa. First of all, how does he know how to do this? Second of all, they would just throw him overboard if he started yelling out orders, most likely. So I didn't like that, but you know, they had to get him to be the hero and they just made it happen.
Okay.
Let's talk about.
So you're kind of saying you liked it because you gave it a pass. You were in the mood to give it a pass on all the things that I'm not giving it a pass on.
I'm not saying this is. Okay.
Well, I hated it for all the reasons that you were able to, somehow you were able to give it a walk when I'm not going to look at a giant bloated Hollywood $1 billion, you know, made by committee, paint by numbers, please everybody, piece of trash.
I'll push back a little on that because some of the, like, kids don't often get killed and leads don't often get killed and then let themselves,
right. And that's why it's doubly upsetting, is because you're actually going to use the trope of killing the kid in this movie. They haven't earned that. They'd sullied the whole concept of killing the kid. Now it's not cool anymore. Right?
I know what you're saying.
Because they did it in this.
I just can't wait to use that quote at the end of this podcast. Let me mark it. It's Tony Arkin, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
No, I hear you. But I, you know, if you don't like, I just thought it was, I enjoyed the ride more than I thought I would. Maybe, you know, when you go from writing this should be called The Voyage of the Dumbeter to like, ooh, whoa, I can't believe that thing just killed him like that, and then actually kind of being invested, I was kind of invested in those kills you mentioned, like, you know, Helsing, where are you? I was kind of on the ride with them, like, ooh, how's he gonna kill this guy, because the last one was so brutal and this thing is not what I thought it would be.
I'm assuming he's gonna rip his neck out,
straight up paranormal monster. And then, you know, then you start to wonder, well, is the kid going to get it? No. And then you're like, whoa, now all bets are off. And that boat arrives destroyed at the shore. So now I'm into that last 20 minutes to see, does he just freaking kill everyone and win? I don't know. I, I was pleasantly surprised by this one. I think it's a fun, like, I would watch it again at Halloween time.
Really?
And have some fun with it. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, with, this was absolute nails on a chalkboard pain for me. I wish I had enjoyed it. I feel like I'm capable of like enjoying a big bloated silly movie for what it is sometimes, but I think they messed with some core things about the philosophy of
they broke the some Arkin rules.
They broke some rules, and they just kind of glossed over things that I feel make the whole enterprise worth it. And so when they take those things out, I'm left with something that's like minus everything for me. And it's weird. I get a little weird about that. I admittedly.
Did Amelia watch it with you?
Yeah, we watched it together.
Did she like it?
She did not like it.
I was going to ask you to bring her in here.
You know, and it's a shame. I like a lot of the people in the cast. I don't think the cast was particularly well directed. I don't like the... You know, again, you know, I mean, I've said this
Liam
before.
Liam Cunningham is awesome. The captain.
He's a great
Liam
actor.
Cunningham
He's great.
A great actor.
He's been in a ton of stuff. He's awesome. A lot of these people are. I mean, Corey Hawkins is really good. Aisling Franciosi, who plays the woman who's a stowaway, is terrific. But they don't give her anything to do. They give her two gags with a shotgun and then an eye roll at how stupid men are. And it's like, why is that in this movie?
That's a cool little moment. And believe me, hey, you're looking at me. You know, I'm like the poster child for male toxicity. But he goes to give her a gun. Like, here, I want you to hold this. And she just looks at him and goes, shh, shh, you know, racks the shotgun. Like, hey, listen, dude. And I was like, I thought that was a nice little touch. I like that.
Yeah, I didn't. I thought it was pandering and ill-timed. And we'd already seen the gag already once. So why see it again? That's what I thought.
All right.
You know, I mean, I think that, it really ticked me off. I have a thing about, you know, this movie feels really built by committee. I don't feel this screenplay is coming from the heart. I don't really feel the dialogue is believable. I don't really believe these actors spend time together as crew working on this boat together. I didn't really believe we were on a boat. There's a lot of things that felt... I got really distanced from the reality and the story and the characters. And then something else really bothered me. And this is going to sound weird because, you know, I love horrible, violent movies. But there's something about the violence in movies like this that really makes me angry. And I was trying to figure out what it was. And I'm like, okay, here's what it is. I don't believe they haven't put in the time and effort to make the quality of this film feel lived in, real, like I'm really on the ocean, in the way with Perfect Storm or Master and Commander or Heart of the Sea or Jaws or any number of movies that take place on the water give you this sense of really being on the water, helping the reality of it. Didn't feel that from this movie at all. Not a lot of reality. It's kind of like, you know, first draft dialogue and not really realized characters, not the fault of the actors. We have, like, once again, you know, the most vivid, pus-filled, ultra hyper-realistic, hacked apart bodies and ripped out throats and necks. Like, it's more graphically realistic than anything you've ever seen, which is par for the course now with a lot of gore effects. And when it's like amidst this other not really paid attention to half-assed reality fantasy stuff, it just makes me feel like that the thing that everybody's really just interested in after all is just, it's just getting the, you know, the viscera correct. And I can't blame the effects teams. They're great. They're doing amazing work, but it just seems so out of proportion considering how little I believe in. Like we saying, like, could you pass the salt? Like, I don't believe they're talking to each other, really. That they live together, or that they're at sea, or that they're actually confronting the unknown. But boy, do I believe graphically in that close-up that somebody's had their head, like, caved in perfectly. That's weird to me. It's just a strange kind of disconnect, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess even that had a... As like, whoa, as wham bang as it was, it delivers. And I've never been one to get off on that or want that even in a film. But I don't know. I feel like even that had kind of a dreamlike quality to it in a sense, like some of the sun stuff, the people getting burned, which was really, as a person of, as a fair skinned Irishman, it was particularly triggering for me.
It looked like Brendan Fraser's The Mummy from like,
yeah, 19- no, it definitely was affected. And I thought to myself, well, I think they just wanted to make a fun, scary, and throw you off the scent a little bit that this thing's going to be like, it's going to deliver on Dracula. Like it's going to be a new badass Dracula, almost kind of like what they tried to do with Michael Myers again, make like a new version of him where he's brutal.
No character, no subtlety, no haunting quality to him, no ability to obsess, have people obsess over him, no supernatural quality. It's all about nuts and bolts. It's like everybody who's interested in nuts and bolts crafts of UFOs without thinking about what's flying them. It's just meat now. It's meat, and it's physical violence people are afraid of. So when they put this. And that's what the main character is saying. It's just science. It's just, you're just a bat. This is just meat. You don't scare me. I'm like, well, why are you making a Dracula movie then? Go make a shark movie.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think that was to set him up as that type of.
Yeah. For a franchise.
Dracula
new Van Helsing.
Right.
He's
yes.
The new
right.
Van Helsing.
The other people on board did not feel that way. And in fact, their religion, their faith does not save them, at least not in the physical realm. And I think some of that, although largely or not explored enough, probably, or in a more effective way, I thought it was an interesting setup. I think they did try. I did buy them on that ship. I did buy some of the nice moments. There was a really nice moment between the little boy actor and Corey Hawkins where he comforts him. And he says something to him like, you know, just because we promised things.
Yeah. No, he says, go say the line. I'm sorry. Say the line.
He says, just because we promised things doesn't mean that they happen, you know, best laid plans type of thing.
Right. And the kid goes, oh, gee, mister, thanks. I feel a lot better now. Literally happens.
Literally
happened
this isn't
in the movie.
Trial of Dr. Mabuse. It's a freaking Dracula on a boat.
It's not even Barbie. In terms of like,
I hated Barbie.
I didn't
that
see
sucked.
It.
Sucked. Movie sucks.
Stop. Don't say this on the
sucks.
Show.
Sucks.
We're not talking about Barbie.
Talk about.
I haven't seen it. Come on.
It's insulting to men and women at the same time, which is a neat
so
trick.
Just leave it alone. Leave it alone. We're canceled. The show's over. Goodbye.
I started this episode by wearing a dress.
They played with something core about. Like the philosophy of why horror movies work or why horror works for me and fucking with that. And other movies do it too, where a lot of horror movies are kind of turning into this a little bit self-empowerment, you know, I'm going to stand up to the thing and show you I'm not afraid thing. And to me, that totally dismantles the reason why there are horror movies in the first place. Because
God, I hate that shit too, which is surprising, but I guess it was the other characters, the fact that they had an alternative to that, which I tolerated it a little bit.
Yeah. I kept on hoping. I mean, I like a bunch of people in the cast and I love that English actor.
Yeah.
I love Liam Cunningham.
Great.
So I kept on rooting for, parts of it. And even rooting for Corey Hawkins. But by the time he kept Dubois-ing it to the point where I'm just like,
dude,
you're up against Dracula. If you're not, if you're not afraid.
Yeah.
Then this isn't a harm. It's not a horror movie. It's,
I can tell
it's
you
an
this
action
too.
Movie.
You just triggered something that might have been part of it for me is that I am not intimately familiar with the Dracula world and
right?
Yeah, so I'm a little more free and loose with like, oh, let's make it a killer bat.
Right,
you know what I mean? Like an alien Dracula.
Right. There are movies like John Carpenter's Vampires. Silly. Goddamn movie. I could watch that all the time. Doesn't bother me at all. They do similar things with that. They cartoonize it, whatever. That's not what bothers me. It's the fact that it's the Demeter. It's Dracula. This is not them riffing on vampires.
Gotcha.
This is them going to the source.
To a source.
And taking this character and not giving even Dracula a character. I'm like, this isn't like, their own story. So they didn't really honor that source material from where that source material is really coming from, which is the Black Plague coming to Europe and you are f***ed You're not, you are afraid of it. You cannot beat it. You aren't going to get better than it because it's an evil that's always been there.
And it's coming. Yeah.
It's inhuman. It can't be not, you can't not be afraid of it.
Right.
So that whole thing is just like, oh, okay, well, I guess you're making it for kids, but then why do they want to see a kid die? And why, like, who are you making the movie for at that point? Maddie Blake, they made it for you.
I think we've tapped onto something here that I'm not intimately familiar with that source material. So I was way more willing to be free and loose. So I get it. I get that. Like, and the same reason why I viscerally hated all the new Halloweens for the exact reason that this bothered you. It's like, now when I see the original Halloween and I see that house, I'm forced to have in my mind, which I'm rejecting, that, oh, when I saw that moment in the first one, there was really this rookie sheriff up in the other room at that time, which they made in 2022. Like, f*** you. No, there's no one there. Don't put that in my head.
Right.
I get it. I empathize. Tony, would you like to put Dracula Boat on the shelf or not?
No.
Yes, you would, and then burn it.
I'd burn the whole shelf down.
I am very happy this happened. We haven't had a
disagreement. No, we've been very agreeable. This is, you know, I'm little upset that we're kind of feel like we've got to close the show when we're really just haven't even scratched the surface of the discrepancy here.
Go ahead.
Because unlike other times where I've like, you know, gone, oh, I can see why you know, where you're coming from. This is one where I'm just like, I'm completely blindsided by your affection for it. The fact that you'd see it again.
Sure.
Blows my mind.
Except for the dark thing did make me mad. I was like, all right, I'd fast forward through that.
So so other than the parts that you couldn't actually physically see, you thought it was a fine and beautiful movie.
It's not that many things. It's just moments where I couldn't.
Three quarters of it.
Is he there right now? I can't tell. But I mean, like every show I watch, freaking, it's the same thing. So I guess I'm getting jaded to it. I saw an article recently, or it was a post, where a guy says that if you watch Netflix, the sound quality, it auto defaults you to like a 5.1 or whatever it was.
Yeah, and, generally.
Yeah. And so you're going to lose dialogue over machines and music and things like that. So you have to readjust your sound by yourself manually with each movie you watch, which I thought, why do I have to do that?
Well,
and
that makes,
I feel like something similar is going on here with the darkness.
Actually, no, that's not true. Don't conflate those. That one thing is actually, because people shouldn't get confused about this. They'll go spend money on stuff they shouldn't. So in the question of the stereo 5.1, it's like some people have a surround sound system and some people just have stereo. So if you have a surround system, it's a completely different mix. It's literally two completely different mixes that they use.
Right.
In this case, it's just kind of a mess of problems that all conflate at once.
I feel
so it's like everybody has different TVs. Those settings are off. They put really, really bad color grades on these films that are very well shot for the most part. Then the studios come and they throw what they call a LUT on it, which is just like a basic wash of cinema, fake cinema icing, right? So it looks glossier or deeper, but it's not really. And that's when you can't really see any details in the blacks at all, when they've crushed them out, and then you start to see banding in the white, like sky, and in the deep blacks, you see these striads of, that shouldn't be there. That's not something that actually should be there. That's a combination of either like mistakes on set where they shot with no primary lights because these cameras are more sensitive. Then they get in and it's like, then they adjust it so much that by the time it gets to you, and then by the time Netflix has taken that file and compressed it, you know, everything you're seeing on streaming, they may say like high def 4K, but it's compressed versions of that.
You're
not actually getting the real deal. And that further distorts it.
Yes. So that's where I feel like a major part of the problem is, because I can't believe, or I don't want to believe maybe, that a director is watching the dailies and seeing that level of darkness and going like, nailed it, guys, let's move on. Like, I just know as a human being, and a director, me being like, just going like, wait a second, hold on, I can't see this right now.
There's
maybe that happens later in the process. I don't know. but it's different happening
movies
a lot.
Have different ways. Sometimes they'll put that color on during shooting, so the director kind of gets an idea, rough idea of what the color will be right from the beginning when he sees the dailies. And sometimes it's all done later and they shoot something pretty bland that they can then totally change.
Oh,
but
we
either
can make this
way, they're not shooting as much in camera as they used to, where you saw on set what you were getting and that was the image. Now it's so many different fingers in the pie that you end up with very muddy looking movies a lot of the time. And that's not what the directors of photography want, really. But there you go.
Well, this was, I think this is good for us. I think it's good for us to disagree.
Okay.
I don't, you know, I don't know if I, and I'm not just saying this because we disagreed. I don't know that I don't think this is going to be one of I would fight for and like leave as one of my choices on the shelf. I don't have the list. We're going to need Carrig to give us the updated list. Like, I wouldn't bump something off for this. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
But I would tend to give it a rate of Peep Paranormal because I thought it was a fun ride. I thought it was kind of a new Dracula on steroids and I had fun with it. I don't want it to be my last voyage on the Demeter.
I just thought, more suspense, slow boil, you know, what's on this boat, how it affects them psychologically. That's all a big part of a lot of Dracula stuff. And I just felt that abandoning that for a thrill ride version of it didn't do service to what the story really can do. And I thought the characters were flat. And when you get good actors like that, that's not, that shouldn't happen.
Tony gives it a P for pass. I give it a P for paranormal. Our first disagreement in some time. But will we disagree next week when our film will be 2023, another pretty current movie, Tony, When Evil Lurks. This is more demon, I believe. Residents of a small rural town discover that a demon is about to be born among them. So there we go. Check out When Evil Lurks, 2023.
We're still friends. We're still good, man.
Who loves you, baby?
We're still good.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. On social media, we're at Rated Paranormal. All music is by Andrew Goldens Jr. You can find him on Instagram at Kid Riga or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
The Prussians.
I
even need it is
something like this. I really want to see you in that dress. Killing the kid. Now it's not cool anymore.